That's Wayne Shorter on tenor sax with Footprints, Herbie Hancock on piano, Reggie Workman on bass, and Joe Chambers on drums. It's from Shorter's 1966 album, Adam's Apple. This is Lead Stories. I'm Beatrice Lead, and we've got quite a program for you today. Following the release of this report, Justice Department's Inspector General Michael Horowitz yesterday released a 568-page report on how officials in the DOJ, the Justice Department, and the FBI handled investigations into former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton's use of a secret email service she had installed in the basement of her Chappaqua, New York home. At the time the server was discovered, Clinton claimed it was merely for convenience. But allegations immediately surfaced that Clinton's private server allowed her to conduct personal business outside of government knowledge or oversight. So the long-awaited report, 17 months in the making, is in. So why does it not address key questions? Well, of course, when we're talking about the Clintons, there's only one person to tap into, and that would be Charles Ortel, a retired Wall Street banker turned forensic financial investigator and anti-charity fraud crusader. He has, as you know, been with us for at least 2+ years following the Clintons and the Clinton Foundation, and tying some very interesting threads together, but we just don't seem to be able to see the end line here, the end game, after tying these knots together. But he's going to be with us today to dissect the Horowitz report, particularly in light of the unique relationships between key figures in the DOJ and FBI probes, and Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton and their eponymous foundation. I would say that we're not going to get through everything today. It's impossible. But we will begin to build a framework that addresses the question that I just asked. How is it that this report, far-reaching as it is said to be, and a major effort involving 17 months of investigation, we still are not getting close to some very basic questions? Charles, great once again to have you on.
Thanks so much, Beatrice, for letting me come back on. I can't wait to get into this.
Well, let's go. This report, what's the big picture feeling that you're having about this report?
Well, I have to confess I have not read every footnote and every word of the report, but I've read enough of it, and I will reread it very carefully over the next several days and coming weeks. But what jumps out at me is you know, the questions that are not answered. And the chief question for me that I don't see being answered here is, why did Barack Obama allow the Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, in his administration, when, you know, from the very beginning, when the world was literally falling apart, why did he agree, or who in his administration agreed, to let Hillary Clinton and her team conduct 100% of the State Department's business on private servers, using unsecure private devices? Who made that call? Who made the call to allow Hillary Clinton to operate the State Department without an inspector general? And then, after she left on February 1st, 2013, why did it take until December 5th, 2014, for some portion of these emails and the related attachments to be transferred back to the State Department, where they should have been residing all along? Who made all of those calls? And you won't see any of the those issues, at least I haven't seen any of those issues addressed yet in this report. Now, maybe Congress is going to take up these important issues. I expect they will next week when the House and the Senate, I believe, are both going to begin the process of finding out what Horowitz may have omitted so far from this report. Another point I make is that the public report obviously does not include a classified appendix, which is referenced in the document. So there may well be a lot of additional information that would which would give us even more concern, I think, over how this all had been handled. Another point I'd make.
Before you go on to your another point, I want you to just stay there with this particular question that you have just raised because it is very important. Why is that question that you just raised, why is it important?
Well, I mean, we get to the question of, was this a knowing scheme to harm the interests of the United States of America, or was this an inadvertent mess? And why does that all matter? We'll get to that in a second. But when we look at this report, it seems to go literally on for way too long in an intense discussion with pages and pages of exhibits. I mean, of explanation. Over how these, vaunted crusaders in the FBI and DOJ determined correctly, the report seems to suggest, that there wasn't a prosecutable case because Hillary Clinton didn't intend to harm the interests of the United States. Well, I'm not a lawyer, and I'm going to say that probably every 10 minutes or so, just because I don't want people believing I'm a lawyer. But I am somebody who does still understand how to read and comprehend English. And I'm looking, today I'm in a place where I have my computer open, and I'm looking at 18 U.S. Code Section 793, which is entitled Gathering, Transmitting, or Losing Defense. That's natural defense, security defense information. And I think the Inspector General and the pundits are guilty of major league dissembling. Because when I look through this code, in Section A, it says, whoever for the purpose of obtaining information respecting the national defense with intent or reason to believe that the information is to be used to the injury of the United States, yes, A has intent. Yes, Section B has intent. Section C has intent. But Sections D, E, and specifically F, the one in which she would have been charged and her co-conspirators would have been charged, do not have the intent requirement, and at least that I see. And then when you get into case law, which relevant case law, there are, just search for Espionage Act and intent, and you'll get to, I think, a decision. I want to say it's called the Grodin decision, but it goes, there's verbiage in it saying that ever since 1941, you didn't need intent for this narrower issue, which is having to do with all of these secrets. So here you have, Hillary Clinton sitting there, Secretary of State, and I have no idea how much information the Secretary of State and staff would get normally in the Internet age. I know how much information I, one human being, get every day on my email, and I have several email accounts, but, personal email accounts. And I shudder to imagine how much email and how many attachments would have been sent, not simply to Hillary's attention, but to the key staffers. And then, obviously there are going to be supplicants, for help inside this country, outside this country. That's the key flashpoint, Secretary of State, where you're dealing, this is the biggest market in the world. There are lots of people inside and outside this country who want favors from the Secretary of State or in America, or Americans who want favors from the Secretary of State outside America. So it's a favor, it's like one gigantic potential bazaar. And if you have, while you're operating as Secretary of State, if you simultaneously have, and I'll say it, an unprincipled, unethical person who, in Bill Clinton, and teams of people around Bill Clinton, who over the course of their long careers in the public domain, I like to joke that there's the only law maybe I'll ever get known for, if I do get known for it, will be Ortel's first law, where you take any Clinton donor or associate and you punch that name in quotes into Google, so long as Google's around, with the word fraud next to it, chances are you're going to find out something interesting. So if you have a system here where all of the business of the State Department, the Secretary of State, the highest echelon of the State Department, is going to be transacted over private, unsecure devices and servers, and you have Bill Clinton operating the Clinton Foundation, you know, basically exercising control over the Clinton Foundation, even though he technically was not a director until 2013 of the main Clinton Foundation, if you have that set of conditions, the potential for fraud and public corruption is so high that, you know, I look at this, again, not as a lawyer, but as somebody experienced in business and investing. You look at this, and what this tells you about the risk profile of the decision makers involved is that they are reckless beyond belief. And I do not understand how a lawyer, Michael Horowitz, who most lawyers are risk averse, could cause people to draft a 568-page document with all these footnotes. A lot of work went into it. And not step back and say, now, hang on, shouldn't we examine at the very beginning what was the process that led to the decision to allow Hillary Clinton to do this, and who are the people involved? And I think the reason they're avoiding it as a guess is because it's possible, certainly it's likely, that we know from this report that Barack Obama and Jim Comey, Barack Obama had and used a private email account. Now, we don't know whether it was hosted on an unsecure server, but we do know from this report and other reporting that he did use a private email account, and as well as maybe a government one. Now, you know, that we're all grown-ups here. Someday, you know, a progressive or an independent or who knows, a Marxist is going to win, you know, the presidency of the United States. And you can't set a system up to attempt to regulate the largest economy in the world and have it gamed from the outset, where you allow the president, the Secretary of State, James Comey, Loretta Lynch, other people to have simultaneously to use personal email accounts, maybe alias email accounts, and government email accounts, because this frustrates the process of deciding what were the presidential records. You know, what were the important national records, which, by the way, are the property of all Americans, not of one party or one person. They're property of all Americans. We have a history. People are going to care about that history. And so, you know, who allowed this momentous decision to actually happen? And then did anybody object over the course of Hillary Clinton's tenure as Secretary of State? Well, we know the answer to that question. And that is not in the Inspector General's report that I see yet. We know that a senior State Department official walked into the door of the Washington field office of the FBI on either January 26th or 7th, 2016, and said, hey, what the hell is going on here? I sent my specific concerns directly to James Comey that I believed Hillary Clinton was mishandling classified information. This person walked in to the FBI field office and demanded to see a person in charge and asked to go right into the SCIF, an SCIF, which is where you handle the most sensitive information, to find somebody in the FBI. He or she wanted to go into the SCIF and give this evidence to make sure the evidence he'd already given to James Comey was brought to the attention of people who, in theory, were investigating mishandling of classified information. And I don't see a reference to that yet in this report. Maybe there is one. So, there's the famous saying is attributed, I think, to Mark Twain. If I'd had more time, I would have written you a shorter letter. Horowitz has had a lot of time here, and it's not his job, I don't believe, as Inspector General. Molly Hemingway has a great piece in The Federalist today. It's not his job, Horowitz's job, to prosecute wrongdoing. It's his job to go through and inspect what happened and, you know, determine whether, you know, how far at variance what happened may be from policies and practices that are supposed to be carried out by the Department of Justice and its sister organization, I believe its subsidiary organization, the FBI. Criminal investigations of what are in this report and follow-ons, those are going to happen other ways. But I was, you know, on the one hand, dissatisfied with the report that I see so far because it didn't take on this core issue, which I think when you create a hierarchy of issues, not all issues are created equal. I think this issue, you know, is probably, if you want to give each issue a weighting, whether, you know, it's 100% or some fraction, I give this issue like 99.9999, maybe 1 in terms percent of importance. I mean, this is a very important issue. How did you allow Hillary Clinton not only to do this on January 21st or whenever she started doing it, 2009, how did you allow her to do this for her entire period as Secretary of State, transact 100% of the business over this unsecure server? How did you let this happen? Why did you let her hang on to all this valuable information while her husband's foundation, then her name was on it in 2013? They're out raising capital sums approaching $200, $250 million for their foundation, retaining this information into in their custody and control. How did you allow this to happen? And why did you allow the Clintons, with this history, to resist turning over this information and then not to have an independent monitor operate in the so-called culling process of, you know, it came to light that these emails were there, I guess as a result of the Benghazi inquiry. You know, why did it take the Benghazi inquiry for this to come to light? And then after that, how comes people then said, oh, wait a minute, you know, the same way we raided Manafort's home at 5 o'clock in the morning, why wasn't the Clinton Foundation and Clinton residents, why weren't they raided the instant somebody found this out? I mean, we don't yet really know how many high-level classified bits and pieces of information may have, you know, been improperly held by the Clintons. We don't know an answer even after this 568-page report. So,
Less like you, I haven't read the full report yet. It is 568 pages, after all, and it came out just yesterday. But of what I have read, I became disturbed about the fact the tone of the report seemed to also incorporate, I would call it, a plausible defenses for Hillary Clinton's unusual, and many other people, many other officials in the administration, their unusual acts and activities. For example, it is, to me, the role of the Inspector General is not just simply to act as a, you know, to develop a timeline as to when things happened, but to discuss how things happened and who was responsible. This report does not seem to assign blame. And I could appreciate the fact that, well, this is not a criminal procedure. This is a matter of simply reporting the facts as they became known. But at some point, I see, for example, in the case of how James Comey's role was explained throughout in a number of interactions, where he clearly was acting as a shill. He clearly was avoiding direct confrontation with Hillary Clinton and giving her a way out by not vigorously proceeding with investigations into the questions, some of which you're asking now. So I was puzzled about the tone here and why it was that Horowitz didn't see fit to take it a little further and to just say, well, I'm just telling you what we unearthed. I'm just telling you what we observed and what we were able to document, as if that is the sum total of the responsibility of the report. And that troubled me a bit.
Yeah. I agree. Another thing that I found, I mean, just to think in terms of the things that are the bombshells, you and I in the past have discussed the fact that, you know, the FBI does have, you know, numerous tens of thousands of people who walk out the front door every day not knowing, you know, whether they're going to come home that night because they're engaged in various you know, they're fighting foreign interests, you know, whether it be Al-Qaeda type people or, you know, domestic criminals, and it's dangerous work. And, you know, I think the line agents of the FBI are wonderful human beings. They're able, I think. They're smart people, and they're able to, if they have political views, they put them on the side and they exercise them at the voting box. But, you know, you think about James Comey here. And after he left, he revealed that his wife was actively supporting Hillary Clinton, that he had, I don't know how many children he has, whether it's four or five, but he said four daughters were all actively working. So his wife and his four daughters are actively campaigning for Hillary Clinton. And you're telling me he didn't have any political bias? Give me a break. Then, you know, we joked about it. I think it's a bad joke, but we joked about it, sad joke, that apparently the Russian side of the equation is that the Russians, you know, in this period of the reset, after Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama initiated an attempted reset where they provided a button that they thought said reset when in fact it said in Russian overcharge, which is interesting. Anyway, they were in this honeymoon period, and they get a call from the Russian equivalent of the FBI saying, you know, these Tsarnaev brothers, you might want to take a look into what they've been doing because we think they're pretty dangerous people. And so we did. The FBI did interview them and concluded there, you know, there was nothing to worry about. That didn't work out so well. Now, you can make bad calls. I understand that. But here we have in Comey, we have somebody who, with a straight face, talking to the Inspector General, actually claimed that he did not know that Uma Abedin was married to Anthony Weiner. Are you kidding me? I mean, that's the kind of thing. I mean, what does he live? Does he not read any newspaper? Did he not remember that Hillary Clinton's husband married Uma Abedin, officiated at the ceremony, to Anthony Weiner? Are you kidding me? That is just implausible, completely implausible. And why is it meaningful? Because the real story that we know so far, we don't really know the complete one, is that the New York Police Department, I believe, discovered this laptop, which had, among other things, images that were alarming, but apparently had tremendous numbers of emails that seemed to be emails that had been, you know, that might have contained classified information. So this is on the Uma Abedin, Anthony Weiner laptop. And Comey's defense for not, you know, vigorously going through that is that he didn't appreciate the significance. Here, Uma Abedin, of course, was Hillary Clinton's closest. She may not have had the senior most title in the State Department underneath Hillary, but she was her close confidant, you know, at her beck and call, constantly traveling with her all over the world. And I said before, I mean, I don't understand how Uma Abedin ever got a security clearance. But now you have the issue of the New York Police Department finds this, I want to say late August, early September 2016, and it sits, the New York Police Department finds it. The New York office of the FBI swoops in and seizes it. And then instead of going through it when they had time to go through it to figure out how much classified information may have been on that email, what sorts of classified information, and was any of that classified information related to the Clinton Foundation, because we are told that the IRS opened a Clinton Foundation investigation in July, by July 27th, 2016, you know, how come nobody vacuumed up that laptop? And the report seems to say that, you know, they didn't really have time to do a thorough search of that laptop prior to the election. So what did they do with it? You know, how come nobody has gone through that laptop? And not, you know, the way I understand when I've read previous summaries of how they do this, you know, there's a difference between what we see they did to Paul Manafort, who, by the way, had his bail revoked today, and he's in jail pending his trials. He's got one trial in July and another in September. We see how the FBI behaves against a Manafort, and we also see how the FBI still behaves against the Clintons. You know, if you have a laptop that has not been bleach bit, and you're wondering how many emails may have disappeared as a result of the bleach bitting that occurred on the ones that have been turned over, it would seem to me, if I were, and I'm not an investigator, nor do I want to be one, I mean, like a government investigator, nor do I want to be one, but the first thing I would have done is I would say, boys and girls and women and men, you know, we want that laptop. We want 1,000 people on this laptop. If we have to hire, you know, an independent contractor to help us, I want to see every one of those damn freaking emails. And I want you to check every, if there are copies, I want to make sure that we've seen, you know, that we're seeing everything, because there could be, you know, a very important one that's slightly different in a material respect. I want you to check every one of the ones sent and received, but most importantly, I want you to reconstruct the draft folder, because a common technique that people, I'm told, use to evade detection is, rather than, quote, sending or receiving an email, they allow their allies to share an email account, and they communicate by having a draft go in, and then somebody responds to the draft and erases the first message. So, you know, I would have wanted some very careful checking of all that. In view of Uma Abedin's close proximity to Hillary Clinton, in view of her family's questionable connections, in certain cases to avowed enemies in the United States of America, I would certainly want that very closely checked. And it doesn't seem that it has been.
Well, the thing that is alarming to me, maybe I'm overreacting, or maybe I just don't understand the true nature of this report. But it seems to me, okay, you're doing an investigation, and you're seeing, you're presenting people who have done some egregious things, but they all also have connections to each other. And you don't see a need to connect those dots. You know,
yeah.
How could you divorce Loretta Lynch from James Comey when they are both connected to Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton and Barack Obama?
Exactly. And when they have so much to lose, right?
And you're looking at, in all three sectors, you're looking at some major, serious crimes being alleged. So, you know, you're looking at the Clinton Foundation, you're looking at the conduct of the Secretary of State, and whether basically she shared information, and we've seen indications that she had shared information, particularly with this guy, Sidney Blumenthal, during the Benghazi investigations. They have a lot of dealings with each other. So it's not just you're looking at problem A, you're looking at all the possible ways in which they are connected. For example, with Comey deciding, once he had authority over the investigation of the server, deciding arbitrarily that nobody in their right mind, no prosecutor in their right mind, would proceed with a prosecution against Hillary Clinton based on what he knew. I mean, that is so bizarre for an official and an investigative official too, for the head of the FBI saying nobody in a prosecutorial position would proceed with the prosecution of Hillary Clinton, and just left it at that. And we heard nothing more about the possible prosecution of Hillary Clinton.
So when you
are confronted with a situation and you see how in so many ways the principles that you're looking at are literally connected to each other, and in situations that beg for deep investigation, I don't know how you could take the position as the Inspector General of the Department of Justice that these things really don't matter very much. In the scheme of things, they're looking into, you know, one compartment, and everything else is just ancillary, and basically trying to make the case that he is not looking at this investigation with an eye toward prosecution, but simply to ascertain the facts of what happened. I don't get that.
Yeah. Well, so I, as you've been speaking, I've been listening carefully, but I've been reflecting, and I now think I see something very important here. And I'd like to, if you beg your indulgence, to follow your line of reasoning and go through something here. I've looked carefully at this paragraph F. This is 18 U.S.C. 793 F. And I want to spend a bit of time and can answer your question. The reason why I think Hillary Clinton was able to get away with this and why Horowitz is doing what he's doing is that the decision to allow Hillary Clinton to operate the State Department in the way she did is a decision that implicates Barack Obama, Eric Holder, maybe Valerie Jarrett, and many other people. And so clearly, Hillary Clintons are very smart at doing this, in my opinion. What they do is they get involved, they involve you in a conspiracy, and you know, and then when if you try to protest too much, they say, well, you know, you're part of this, so you're not going to get away. Let me read this to you. The important thing, F starts with the most important word, whoever. Whoever. That means Barack Obama. That means Valerie Jarrett. That means Eric Holder and then Loretta Lynch. Whoever being entrusted with or having lawful possession or control of any document, and it goes on many different types of documents, relating to the national defense, one, through gross negligence permits the same to be removed from its proper place of custody or delivered to anyone in violation of his trust or to be lost, stolen, important word, abstracted or destroyed, or two, having knowledge that the same has been illegally removed from its proper place of custody or delivered to anyone in violation of its trust or lost or stolen, abstracted or destroyed, and fails to make prompt report of such loss, theft, abstraction, or destruction to his superior officer shall be filed under this title or imprisoned not more than 10 years or both. Bingo. That is Hillary Clinton. That is Uma Abedin. That is Jake Sullivan. That is Barack Obama. That is Loretta Lynch. That is Eric Holder. And then it goes on, and gee, if two or more persons conspire to violate any of the foregoing provisions of this section, and one or more of such persons do any act to affect the object of the conspiracy, each of the parties to such conspiracy shall be subject to the punishment provided for the offense, which is the object of such conspiracy. In other words, each offense here is 10 years in prison. So I think what happened here is that in the, you know, the no laws really matter period, when Barack Obama was president of the United States, the Clintons knew that they couldn't alone be implicated. That at worst, if some fool decided to go after them for this period while Barack Obama was president, they had the loaded, not real gun, but you know, figurative gun, saying, we're not going down alone for this. We're taking all of you with us. And Barack Obama said, while he was president, he made the mistake, in my view, of giving a television appearance where he said, you know, Hillary Clinton didn't intend to harm the national interest of the United States. Well, that's obstruction of justice, what he said. I mean, there was an investigation. When he said that, in April of 2016, there was an open 811C FBI investigation into Hillary Clinton's mishandling of classified information, which was not resolved by April of 2016. He made those comments in I forget whether it was CBS or one big television, of course, that got a lot of notice. And that, now you're James Comey. What the hell do you do? I mean, the President of the United States has just said that, you know, she's not going to be prosecuted. You know, you're not stupid. Maybe you are stupid, as James Comey, but you're certainly not independent at this point. And you say, all right, I guess we better work on that exoneration letter. Barack Obama, the president, just said she's not going to be prosecuted because she didn't intend to harm that. So there's not enough analysis here. I think Horowitz, and maybe it's up to people like you, Utrice, and maybe, dare I say, me and others who are not, you know, in the government, to speak up and say, now, wait a minute. Okay, you know, you have a lot of people spending a lot of money in the Inspector General's Department of the Department of Justice. There are a lot of people in Congress spending money, a lot of people in the Department of Justice, the FBI spending money. You know, they all work for We the People. And, you know, it sure looks to me, again, I'm not a lawyer, but it sure looks to me like this was a fake investigation. You know, the FBI had its arms clipped by, you know, a willing clipper in James Comey. His wife is out there with his four daughters trying to make sure that Hillary Clinton's the next president of the United States. He's looking at his personal calculation. Now, you won't find this in his book, I guess. I'm not certainly not going to pay to read his book or spend the time on it. But, you know, you don't see him weighing up and saying, well, look, let's see. If I put Hillary Clinton away with her co-conspirators, you know, that's going to cost me my wife, my four daughters, and, you know, who knows how whether I even get it done as FBI head when I've got Loretta Lynch over here who's actually responsible for prosecutions I'm not. You know, that's on the one hand. If on the other hand, I play along and, you know, Hillary Clinton wins, you know, how powerful am I all of a sudden? My wife's happy. My four daughters are happy. I'm head of the FBI. I got years left in my term. And I know that Hillary Clinton is dirty. How powerful does that make me? And, you know, that's what we're not going to see these questions, you know, asked and answered on CNN or MSNBC. Very pleased that we're having a chance to talk on Progressive Radio Network about this. This is an issue that, you know, people need to get Bernie Sanders out of his one of many vacation homes, get him on the line and say, dude, you know, why did you say you didn't care about the emails? I mean, are you not familiar with 18 U.S.C. 793, subparagraph F and G? Because if you're not, you know, why were you thinking about running for president, right? I mean, what if you'd won? Did you care then if you'd won about the Espionage Act? Because you might have wanted to. You know, this is the kind of stuff. I mean, people need to hold Bernie Sanders and these people running around the country now saying, as Democrats, they want to be president of the United States, taking on Trump. You know, ask these people some tough questions. Get them answered.
Speaking of which, we should open up the lines, and you can ask Charles Ortel and me. I'll try to see if I can answer your question to the same level of authority as Charles at 888-874-4888. Now, we are just beginning to discuss this report. This is not the be-all and end-all of our discussions about the report, but we are discussing the overall reaction we're having to this report. It is not sitting well. It, in fact, creates even more questions than it attempts to answer. And some of the questions that are raised, unintentionally perhaps, are so critical, you wonder how come they could miss this stuff after 17 months of investigation. None of these questions are on the board. And the report is very careful to say it is not an accusatory document, but simply a way of amplifying questions and issues that had not been thoroughly explored or explained. And if it is to go any further, that's for somebody else to do. By the way, Charles, who would that somebody else be?
You. No, I think in government, this is the problem we have here. I mean, the Attorney General of the United States, Mr. Sessions, has recused himself from the Russia investigation, the supposed Mueller matter. The Deputy Attorney General of the United States, the person who does technically run the Justice Department, is somebody, Rod Rosenstein, who I believe has massive conflicts of interest for his failures to see obvious Clinton Foundation frauds when he was in a position of responsibility at the Justice Department over tax fraud matters from 2001 to 2005 as the fraud escalated. And there are other, you know, Ron Boxey, Clinton Bush Haiti. There are other areas where Rosenstein, I believe, has conflicts and may be interested in obstructing a thorough investigation that would expose the motivations and expose what was really happening with this Clinton Foundation and with other public matters of public corruption. that appear to this day to have been covered up. So, you know, the top two people, one's recused, another has conflicts. The head of the FBI, I was not impressed with his press conference. I mean, here's somebody who worked on the Enron task force with Bob, which Bob Mueller was in charge of, and about whom Sidney Powell, an author I do like and admire, her book License covers this whole area. She has some very negative things to say about Mr. Wray. And, you know, so I don't understand the appointment of Rosenstein. I don't understand the appointment of Wray. I don't understand Wray's reaction to all this. Donald Trump seems to be willing to give Christopher Wray independence here to get this house in order. But to suggest that what you're going to do in the wake of this report is start giving people training on understanding bias, I mean, come on. You know, the other thing that really leaps off the pages here, now that you bring this up, is how can you conclude there was no bias? I mean, we have multiple examples. We have examples of people in this report saying that discussing and wrestling with the issue of how are they going to investigate the next president of the United States, i.e. Hillary Clinton? You know, I'm very uncomfortable investigating the next president of the United States. Excuse me? You know, Peter Strzok saying to his lover, as they're cheating on their spouses, you know, Hillary Clinton should be ahead 100 million to zero, you know, in the polls. I mean, this is lunacy.
Omar Wallet from Virginia, you're on the air with Charles Wortel.
Okay, I think this is absolutely fantastic. Utrice, how can you allow yourself to be used by Mr. Wortel? Mr. Wortel is a supporter of the white nationalist.
That's not true.
If you know,
that is absolutely not true. That is not remotely true.
It's not.
Not only is it not true.
It's just so insulting to anybody's intelligence to allege that.
Have you
I'm
no
sorry.
Shame? That's ridiculous.
We go next to Khalil from South Carolina.
I know he would
have an intelligent question to ask.
I'm so glad you're able to take my call. I just have three questions for Mr. Wortel. Mr. Wortel, can you hear me?
I can. Please call me Charles, by the way, but delighted to try to answer them.
Sure. Thank you, Charles. So I remember distinctly around the same time, and let me make this clear, I voted for Hillary Clinton only as a defensive mechanism, no love lost. However, I distinctly remember there was a scandal where the State Department's email, they were being hacked left and right.
Right.
And I didn't hear you mention that yet. You know, and do you remember this?
Oh, I do, absolutely. There are allegations of that, the so-called Guccifer. Yeah, absolutely. I remember that, sure.
Okay, and that, you know, that's one of the reasons that Mrs. Clinton, Secretary Clinton, said she had a server in her house. So when this came to light in the press, you know, the reporters, good reporters, were asking around, saying, well, have other people done this? And Colin Powell had done it. And don't get me wrong, now, I've had sensitive positions, and it's terrible data hygiene. You should never use a private email or server, especially in government work. That's just tacky, and I get that. It's not a good idea. But it just simply wasn't illegal at the time. That's the thing. It just wasn't illegal. They've since changed that law.
Well, see, as I understand it, you know, I've never worked in government, and I'll see that you haven't, so you know perhaps better than I do. I think the issue here is not that she used a personal email. The issue is that 100% of the State Department's business was transacted over a private server.
Mm-hmm.
While she
right.
was Secretary of State. That did not happen under Colin Powell or any other Secretary of State. That was
okay.
so far away from being past practice or accepted practice, and,
okay.
as what I understand to be the case. And the people who are trying to, in the press, trying to, you know, conflate the issue to say that, you know, this was a security review of all the practices of, I know you're not saying this, but of all previous Secretaries of State, that's not the case. I mean, this was an investigation triggered on the 7th of July 2015 by the Inspector General of the Intelligence Community, and turned under Section 811C of the some Defense Authorization Act, I think. And the FBI opened an investigation, not into all secretaries of state, into Hillary mm-hmm. Clinton's potential mishandling of classified information. That happened on July 10th, 2015.
Okay. I'm glad you cleared that up. And the only other question I have is, I'm not clear, maybe I missed something, but since Comey released that information days before the election, what advantage did that give to Mrs. Clinton if they were in cahoots?
I'm sorry?
Because it damaged Mrs. Clinton. It didn't damage the other candidate. It damaged Hillary Clinton.
Well, I can't explain. I mean, Comey made so many missteps, not simply in this process, but while as FBI director and then earlier in his career, it's tough to explain each of them. I don't know why he felt railroaded at the end to make you're talking about the announcement about the Abedin Wiener laptop. On the one hand, he made the announcement. On the other hand, people around him allowed the FBI to delay a serious investigation of the contents of the laptop. We now know from the Horowitz report that no such investigation happened, or according to what I read, they've never actually gone through that Abedin Wiener laptop with the care that I think it deserves. And so, you're right, it's tough to explain what he did. I think he managed to, it's tough to do what he did, actually. He's managed to upset Trump supporters, Clinton supporters, maybe even independents. Perhaps his wife and his four daughters still love him, but he's managed to upset a lot of people.
Well, thank you for your question.
You.
Philip from New York, you're on the air with Charles Ortel.
Hello.
Hey, Philip.
Yes, you're on the air.
Hi. I listened to the first call. And how are you, Mr. Ortel? I listened to the first caller and realized that. Let me say this. I have a tremendous problem with Hillary Clinton, but it has nothing to do with what Mr. Ortel has been talking about for as long as Donald Trump has been president. My biggest problem with Hillary is how she used her position to authorize the murder of Muammar Gaddafi. That is problematic for me. It's problematic for me that Barack Obama was president when that occurred. But I've listened to you talk about this, Mr. Ortel. I think it's been about a year and a half, and I think that the man who sits in the White House in the Oval Office has been in that position for that entire time. And no matter how much I weigh what you're saying about Hillary and what I see happening every day in the Oval Office, I'm stuck. I can't generate the kind of concern related to Hillary that I do about what this man is doing and where that may ultimately lead this country and my granddaughter. I am amazed at the amount of time and effort and dedication and experience and intelligence you've applied to this. But it doesn't rise to the level of concern of what's happening right in front of our eyes today. And I think that's what the first caller was getting at. We're sort of beating a dead horse. And right in front of us, horrible things are happening. What you're saying about that report yesterday and what I get from that report yesterday is exactly what the caller who just hung up just said. It hurt Hillary. I'm not a fan of Hillary. I can care less about her. But it hurt Hillary, and still we're ignoring Trump.
Okay.
And I guess that's why I called. I don't get that. And
one of the things I did say, Philip, when I opened up was that we are discussing the report. As you know, we've been talking about the Clinton Foundation for about 2 years here on Lead Stories, specifically based on what Charles Ortel has unearthed and in terms of proceeding with a very close examination of the Clinton Foundation, its policies, its practices, and the damage that is still immeasurable, which is the reason I'm involved, the damage that the Clintons have done in the black world is just, it has not yet been measured. and it's profound. So this report coming out does raise again the question of why authorities are not even getting close to the foundation. And a lot of what was uncovered in this report, of course, had to do with the Clinton Foundation, which it did not proceed in minute detail to discuss. It didn't discuss it. So we are on the trail of the Clinton Foundation, how it operates, especially in the black world. There's no accounting. And at times when you would think that there's enough evidence accumulated by them, by the authorities, to proceed with some kind of a prosecution, every time they, you know, divert from that, they just don't touch it at all. And this report was yet another example.
If I could just try to react to what this gentleman's saying, I just want to make clear that in the 2016 election, I did not vote because I knew that what I was involved, what I care about is fraud, the fraud not happening in particularly in the charitable world. There are a lot of excellent charities, but they're not regulated well enough. And the example of the Clinton Foundation cannot allowed to let stand, because if it stands unprosecuted, it just means that other fraudsters will believe they have a license to do even worse things. So it needs to be exposed. On the question of what Donald Trump, I don't know about your specific concerns about Donald Trump, but I see in him, and at least in his record as president, somebody who is doing his level best to disrupt a system which actually has managed to succeed since 1988 or thereabouts. We could go way further back into history if you like, but certainly from 1988 to the present, has managed to succeed in making it very difficult for people who play by the rules and are in the bottom 80% by income of this country to get ahead, to save any money, to keep their families whole. It's very, very difficult. I think Donald Trump is succeeding, frankly, in improving the economic opportunity that will become available over time. There's a $21 trillion of debt now on our country, which is a lot of money, more debt on a country than any other country. As far as the military adventurism of Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, what they did in Libya was disgusting, and we still don't know the truth about what actually happened in Benghazi. What were the motivations of the actors around not simply Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, but the French and the English and others? What were they doing there? What treasure were they trying to get? And Benghazi today and Libya today it's worse than deplorable there. I mean, the people are worse off than they have ever been. The anger and hatred is higher than it's ever been. And that whole episode is beyond disgusting. It's actionable. People need to be in jail over what happened there.
Yes, I am. I appreciate
the time. Could you finish up, because we're out of time? But you could round out your comments.
Well, I appreciate Mr. Ortel's commentary. I thank you very much for that. But I'm stuck in a place where I look at a man like Donald Trump, and I don't see ever an effort on his part, if I weren't a celebrity or a boxer or something in that, to respect the average black man. His disrespect for Barack Obama speaks oodles. Barack was one of the few people that was academically accomplished, and Donald Trump could care less about him. So I don't see Donald Trump as a person who's particularly caring about the suffering of black people in country or outside the country. And I agree with you. Hillary and Bill were not very good in either of those instances. But I appreciate you taking my call. Thank you very much. I love your show. I'll continue to listen. And Mr. Ortel, thank you again for responding to that.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Well, Charles, that brings us to the end of our program today, which was just the opening salvo on this 568-page report that is supposed to keep us comforted by the fact that somebody is taking care of business. But as we've said, it raises more questions in our minds, which we will proceed with next week. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Alternative Visions with Dr. Jack Rasmus. And I appreciate you listening to this program today. Bye-bye.